irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yes, you are, and you would be listening with Paul Strohle and myself, Michael Sterling, but Paul is in Chicago.
Which is what we say when I tie him up and put him in the closet.
That's right. Somebody's got to do that, right?
That's right.
Might as well do it with him. But he will be returning, actually, ladies and gentlemen, in the next week, so we will welcome him back. And
That's right. In the interim,
we have Andrew David James.
Glad to be here, Michael. Thanks for letting me sit in his chair again.
Absolutely. Why don't we thank our sponsors?
We could do both. Yeah, we could thunk them and thank them.
I will start off. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com. One of the internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
We are indeed, and Mike Napoli and his crew over there, we love them.
Good people. And
yeah, you know, 5 years with them already.
Wow,
we're getting
great.
Ready to go into our sixth year here. And you would be right, Andrew, in studio, right about what we just talked about. What am I talking about now? You see, I get lost in listening to you.
You know what? I have that problem all the time. Sometimes people just, they walk away when I'm talking. I can only assume that it's because they were so captivated by the sound of my voice.
I was. It was, probably had something to do with butterscotch.
People lose all sense of time and space when
I
start babbling.
And I did just then. How embarrassing. But today is my point. Today in studio with us are two of LA's hardest working members of the performing arts community, veteran Broadway performer and artistic director of the Distinguished NoHo Arts Center. The much revered James Mellon is here to talk about his all-new one-man autobiographical drama comedy, Sissy Boy, opening February 5th at the NoHo Arts Center in North Hollywood.
And a familiar star on the SoCal musical theater scene who gives new meaning to the title Triple Threat, the insanely gifted Justin Michael Wilcox joins us today to discuss his role in the new musical Empire, now on stage at the La Mirada Theater for the Performing Arts through Valentine's Day, February 14th.
Yes, indeed. Great way to spend a Valentine's, huh?
Good, good.
The show's
indeed.
Getting nice reviews. We'll That's talk right. about that in a little bit. But before we talk to our guest, Andrew, how are you? I haven't seen you all week. What went on?
That is not correct.
Well,
have you
that
forgotten?
One time.
That meaningful night that we spent together,
busy.
You've forgotten already. You were busy. I'll tell the audience real quick. I was invited under your kind hospitality to attend your club, Sterling Upstairs at the Federal. What a great time we had. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
There was a guy on stage who was singing who's got a few chops, man.
Yeah.
I tell
a
you.
A few chops and a few awards in his
yeah,
pocket.
I'd say John Lloyd Young, what a performance. We had a great time. And I got to tell you, boy, we need more clubs like that. Maybe not here in LA to compete with you, but we need more clubs because, Michael, it was a great evening out. Do you have a Valentine's Day show coming up?
We do not.
Nothing
no,
on Valentine's
No, we do not.
Day.
We don't. We come back in February with Nita Whittaker,
wow.
who is one of the great stars of musical theater and goes out there on the road and does concerts with, like, Andrea Bocelli.
Yeah.
Many other people. She said, you know Nita Whittaker, mm-hmm. don't you? Of course you do.
Well, we had a great time. We had a great time sitting there and enjoying the evening. The food was great. The drinks were great. And, of course, the performance was great. But more than that, Michael, the ambiance was amazing. And I think that's a credit to you.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks.
I told you my beautiful bride, as soon as you walked into the room,
so
said,
pretty.
You know, I try not to let people know that because then they're like, why is she with you? But I let it go that night. I let her out in all her full. And that was only about half of what she can be. I have her tone it down as much as possible so she'll let me sit next to her. I got to tell you, Michael, as soon as you walked into the room. She, of course, hadn't seen your face yet because you're on radio. And she says to me, she says, is that Michael? I said, how did you know? And she goes, he looks like you described him. I said, how did I describe him? She goes, owns the room, great hair. I went, yep, that's Michael.
So nice.
There you go.
I like her already.
But your kind hospitality was not the only performance I saw this weekend. I went to go see The Women of Shakespeare, produced by It's a New Day, starring Ovation Award nominee Brittany S. Wheeler. And, of course, Kate Perry, who's a young girl who's making some great strides in L.A., doing some really great work. 13 years old and played Juliet, did some really beautiful things. I also saw our amazing Scott Dreyer in Doris and Me, which was a
you
great
did.
Show. Yeah, he was excellent.
Scotty and that show, that's been everywhere. God bless him. He raises money for Doris Day and her animal foundation with that show.
And just an enjoyable performance as well. I mean, you sit there and you're really happy to be there. I think that's a great thing for theater in L.A. We need a lot more shows like that.
Wonderful.
What did you do, Michael? Did you have a good week?
You know, I did. We just finished our fourth week of LA's Next Great Stage Star.
Of course.
2016.
Of course.
Presented by Princess Cruises for the first year, which we're so thrilled about. And we are doing it at the beautiful NoHo Arts Center. So we went through our fourth week, and we're heading into the final 2 weeks.
And what happens during those final 2 weeks? Is it eliminations?
No, there are no eliminations until the finale.
That's right.
And that is in the sixth week. So all of these 20 contestants will sing every week in front of our judging panel, which James Mellon has just recently served on. Usually we have 4 to 5 judges each week, different. And then they all come back for the finale. And they critique them in the earlier weeks, but they do not critique them in the finale week. Hmm. But that is the time when the eliminations occur. The last sing by all 20 of them, 15 get dismissed after that, and 5 rise to the top. And the judges have an option to save a sixth person that they have just one of somebody they've just let go if they want to pull them back in.
Wow.
And that has to be unanimous. And if and then everyone compete, those 5 compete against each other, or 6. But all of those votes that they've accumulated through the previous weeks from the audience who votes and also the judges are thrown out.
Wow.
So everybody at that moment in time is on a level competitive field.
That's great. Now, people can see this online, correct? And they watch it online?
They can. Yes, they can purchase it through Brown Paper Tickets and watch each event online.
Fantastic.
And, you know, the winner will receive a very handsome gift of $2,500. And Marco Gomez of Doma Theater here in Los Angeles pulled me aside the other day and said, how much is that prize for the winner? And I said, $2,500. He said, we'd like to add $500 on behalf
goodness.
Of Doma.
That's fantastic.
Never happened before.
Fantastic.
Right?
What a great thing.
And then Princess Cruises is doing an amazing thing, not only production-wise to help us, but with regard to the audience attendance. They are giving away a $5,000 cruise for two up the West Coast and or the Mexican coast, and a guaranteed stateroom with a balcony.
Fantastic.
And the odds are really good about winning it because, you know, the number of people that will have passed through the competition will be, you know, somewhere between 700 and 800 people.
Wow.
So that's pretty good odds. Right?
Well, of course, I'm in rehearsals for Dark Heart of Poe up here at the Simi Valley Cultural Arts Center right now, which I'm directing, and with this amazing cast. And I'm hoping to come down and see you because we finally have one day off of rehearsal coming up this weekend. So
are you able to come this
31st? If you'll let me be in, I'd love to sit and watch.
Put you to work once you're there, but yes,
it's strange. I walked in with a John Lloyd Young concert and I expected it to be a sing along, and then you asked me to sit down and be quiet, which I thought was a little offensive, but you know, we'll let it go this time.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, why don't we get into the real meat of this program
Indeed.
And talk with our guests here? Do you want to start
Let's
that off?
Do that. Indeed. All right. As an actor, our first guest made his Broadway debut as Riff in West Side Story, directed by Jerome Robbins, a fantastic director, and performed in numerous plays and musicals, including A Chorus Line on Broadway, the U.S. National Tour of 42nd Street, and regional productions of The 5th of July, and as Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar, based out of Chicago. He has worked at such theaters as the Goodspeed Opera House, the New York Shakespeare Festival, the Cleveland Playhouse, the Kennedy Center, the Folger Theater in Washington, D.C., as well as the Williamstown Theater Festival. He is also a noted director of theater, a playwright, and artistic director of the much-heralded NoHo Arts Center in North Hollywood, California. Here today to talk about his one-man autobiographical comedy drama, Sissy Boy, some say it was named after me, opening in previews February 5th at where else but the beautiful NoHo Arts Center. Please welcome the revered Mr. James Mellon.
That is so weird.
I love the applause. Thank you.
Welcome,
James.
Well deserved.
Thank you. Thank you. That was very nice hearing all that. Wow. Took me down memory lane.
Did you know you were revered?
Apparently, yeah.
I want to be revered. I don't know how you get to do that. That's pretty impressive.
I'm not sure I would have agreed with you about Jerome Robbins when you said he was such a nice director, but okay.
In personality?
In almost every aspect.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Didn't you ever hear the story about Jerome Robbins in Fiddler on the Roof when he was berating the entire company. And as he backed up, he was headed towards the orchestra pit, and not one person told him he was about to fall, and he fell into the orchestra
pit.
Oh,
my.
That was when we were on Broadway in West Side Story, and Fiddler was down the street.
Wow.
And when we got that news, there was a cheer from the Minskoff Theater.
Wow.
Good Lord.
He's not very revered.
I would say revered is not what we should use there. So,
yeah. So, I've heard about his...
And I talk about him in Sissy Boy. There's an entire section, obviously, on West Side Story in Sissy Boy.
Now, has the work always been quality? I mean, I've heard such wonderful things, and what little clips I've seen, of course, have been great artistically on stage. Is that correct?
Oh, you mean West Side Story?
Yeah.
He's brilliant.
Brilliant.
I mean, here's the thing. Brilliance does not always translate into nice or supportive.
Yeah.
But he's brilliant. He was brilliant, and I learned a lot from him.
I've worked really hard at being neither. Neither brilliant nor kind.
Brilliant or supportive.
Works well for me. That's amazing. I tell you, that's a story. When you're walking towards an orchestra pit and nobody tells you, you'd think on the fall down you went, huh, this might be a good time to reevaluate my personality.
Oh, no. He came back with a vengeance.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Like a week later, he was in the Minskoff Theater having us do Cool like 20 times.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
What a story.
Yeah. But he has passed, and I'm sure he knows a lot more now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you worked with the lovely Carol Lawrence, did you?
No. I'm not that old.
Oh, okay.
No. I was in the revival.
Oh, of course not.
My God. That would make me like 90.
Just playing with you.
No, great for 90.
Well, Riff was cast as one at the time. So.
Yes. I was a child in 1957. I wasn't even born.
Did you say Justin great for 90?
Looks great for 90.
Don't I look good for 90? I know.
Yeah.
No, I did it with Debbie Allen. Debbie Allen was playing Cheetah's role.
Oh,
and Josie DeGuzman was playing Maria.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Very nice. So is that one of your best memories on of theater? I mean,
no.
Musical theater?
West Side Story?
Yeah.
No, I was thinking of quitting the business after that experience.
Wow.
Just because
it was
of
a,
Mr.
No, it was
Robbins?
A really difficult experience. Yeah. And Riff is one of the hardest roles in Broadway history to dance. I mean, it really is very, very difficult. So no, in fact, it really turned me off of theater for a very long time. But it was the next show right after that, which was this huge revival of Funny Face, Fred Astaire's big musical at the Goodspeed Opera House, that brought me back into the fold. I was like, I got to play Fred Astaire, and it was really fun. I got to meet Ethel Merman, who came backstage.
Wow, what was that like?
Oh, it was great. She came backstage, and she was like, kid, you're like Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire put together. And that was nice of her.
Yeah, tough to beat that compliment.
I have a great picture of me and Ethel. I look like I'm like a rat. I'm all wet from having just finished the show. And she's standing next to me in this cute little dress. It's a great picture.
A friend of mine swears this is a true story, which happened to him. He lives in New York. He was waiting for a taxi, and it was raining. So you know how hard they are to get, right? And he got one, and he opened the door, started to get in, and he heard this voice, for me! And it was Ethel Merman. She went right in and shut the door on him.
How
funny. Oh, my God. Yeah.
But he got a great story out of it, so it all worked out.
Worth the cab ride.
Oh.
Or lack thereof.
That's right.
Oh, can I tell you another little Ethel Merman story? So, opening night of Woman of the Year. I'm sitting about three rows behind Ethel Merman, and she's sitting with Leroy Reams, who was the original Billy Lawler in 42nd Street. So Lauren Bacall hits this note that is really not on any musical scale.
And imagine
as she hits the note, you see, and I'm like three rows behind Ethel Merman, you see Ethel Merman go, Jesus! And it's so loud that the entire area of the orchestra starts laughing. To my dying day, that will be one of my funniest times sitting in an audience. Jesus!
You do it very well. You say it.
I can still see her. I'm surprised her wig didn't pop up.
Oh, funny.
Yeah.
What a character she was, of course. But
yeah,
I never got to see her. Lauren Bacall, I did see, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in Woman of the Year.
Wow. Can you tell us about Sissy Boy? Where did this idea come
from? Absolutely.
Well, here's the deal. I think I've spent my whole life, I've played many really macho, masculine, you know, I love playing the comic role, but I've mostly been cast Paul in Carnival, that Jack Hoffs has directed, 5th of July, kind of the Riff in West Side Story.
Right.
But deep inside, I always felt like a sissy because I grew up kind of gay. I mean, I was kind of effeminate and I was kind of sissy. And I liked being a sissy. And then, you know, when I got to New York, it was like, oh, wait, I better butch this up.
Really?
And then I started getting all these roles. But I wasn't like that offstage. So I literally, at this point in my life, I put such good perspective to what all of that was, and I am just as I am me now. I don't have to be anything for anybody. If I'm acting, I'm acting fine, but I get to be me. So I have all these funny stories of what it was like growing up as a sissy inside a body, and I mean, I was this big muscle guy for a long time, in this body that did not look like a sissy. So people weren't expecting what they got from me sometimes. So that's really what it came from. I want to tell the younger generation, although they don't really need to know this that much, it's actually on my generation, it's okay to be whoever you are. Be authentic, that's all that matters. Mm-hmm. So I found a really funny way of telling this story, my story, about what it is to be a sissy boy and grow up in a family with a father who's a cop and five brothers who are all football stars, and then me, the tap dancer. You know, so that's really where it came from. And I've been writing it forever. And it's my husband who one day kind of pushed me into this. We had this big gala at my center, and I'm walking around the silent auction, and I see this thing called Sissy Boy. I was like, what is this? He said, oh, we just sold 100 tickets for you to do Sissy Boy. I went, I didn't write it yet. I mean, I've like written 10 pages. He goes, well, now you've got 3 months. Finish it.
Of course, we're talking about Kevin Bailey.
We are. Mr. Kevin Bailey.
The wonderful performer that he is and director that he is.
So that's how 2 years ago it started, and I wrote it. We did it. A lot of people were there, and they said, you really need to do this.
Wow.
So now we're doing it on stage, full out, and really full out with a little more of me exposed than I was expecting. But it's okay. I'm working out.
Now, where did you grow up?
Yeah,
I grew up in Philly.
My goodness.
In Philadelphia.
My goodness.
Most of my life. And what's funny is I never even went to New York or to a Broadway show till I was a sophomore in college.
Wow.
I went to see Pippin.
What made you become interested in that?
In musical theater? In
musical theater.
You know
theater?
What? I can tell you. I was sitting in some class in high school, and they announced auditions for My Fair Lady, and something in my head went, that'd be fun, because I'm not going to play sports, clearly. So I got on it, and it was for some girls' high school, Nazareth Academy. I got on a little bus and went all the way down to Nazareth Academy and auditioned, and that was it. I have never looked back.
Wow.
Never had anything else I wanted to do until I suddenly, as you know, became a minister.
Right.
And then I kind of put it all aside and became a minister. And then kind of said, wait a minute, I'm not putting that aside. Let's put it together. I mean, the Catholic Church is perfect. Everybody on that stage, what a pageant, what a production. I was like, let's just do that. Let's do shows as a minister. So as you know, my Sunday service now is like a Broadway show. I mean, it is. People will leave church on Sunday. They line up to say goodbye to me. They will leave church and they'll say, thank you, that was a great show today.
Do you get applause occasionally?
Always. Oh, my God, always.
And they have a band. They have singers.
We have a band, singers, big production numbers. I even tap dance sometimes.
Wow.
Well, I mean, sometimes. You know, if I have a point I can make with taps, I do.
And it's the Global Truth Center.
The Global Truth Center,
and,
yes.
And people can also see your live events, streaming.
Yeah, that's a four-camera shoot every Sunday. Yeah,
wow.
Live every day. And we have a huge, we have about 150, 200 people that watch every Sunday.
Amazing.
Besides the 100 and some odd people that are packed into the theater. So it's good.
How long have you been doing that?
I became a minister 13 years ago.
Wow.
But it was when I was in L.A. doing a musical I wrote called An Unfinished Song.
Right.
That I went to hear somebody speak. His name was Dr. David Walker. He spoke. I went, oh, wait. Oh, wow. That makes sense to me. Because I'd grown up Catholic and then Buddhist and then Course in Miracles. I just was all over the map. And this one, I got it. It was just new thought. And it was just like, oh, it's all of it together. So it made perfect sense to me. And so like I'm like traveling all around the country dancing and singing, but flying back to L.A. for classes. And we really moved here for me to be here for church.
Wow.
I mean, reluctantly. Kevin, I mean, that was one of our big, mm-hmm. Kevin was like, I'm not moving to L.A. And I said, well, I'm not staying in New York.
Wow.
And we were like, okay, are this 15-year marriage needs some discussion.
Now, were you a minister when you played Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar?
No.
That must have, I mean, what a strange experience on that spiritual journey.
Well, yeah. When I played Jesus, I played it twice. I did a first production in Chicago, then I
pretty
did the
impressive.
National
Jesus
tour.
Only played it once, so that's pretty amazing.
One performance, well dead. No, but when I played Jesus the first time, I actually was 33 years old.
Wow.
The age that he was.
That must have been surreal.
Crucified.
Yeah.
It was weird. I was still very spiritual at the time, but it did change my perspective on what I was thinking in terms of Christianity and what was working for me. Mm-hmm. But when I did it the second time, I had a big catharsis. Every time I went to sing Gethsemane, I almost couldn't sing because I got overwhelmed by the emotion of it.
Right.
And I think it was right after that that I started going to Unity in New York City and really started to dig in and see, you know, what did Jesus have to say? What does he have to say to me? Mm-hmm. And he has a lot to say to me. He says a lot of great things.
It's interesting because obviously Godspell and Jesus Christ Superstar and shows like that started not only a musical theater reawakening, but a spiritual reawakening.
Absolutely.
All across the country. It was a fascinating time, and obviously a ton of repercussions came from that to where we are now.
Oh, yeah. And Stephen Schwartz, who's one of my dearest friends, if you just listen to any of his music, Defying Gravity, that's a spiritual song. Mm-hmm. You know, most of it, Children of Eden, that whole show. Yeah. I mean, that's where he comes from. So I love that kind of music. Mm-hmm. And at our church, we don't use regular music. I don't want to hear church songs.
You don't hear a whole lot of Amazing Grace and Old Rugged Cross there, eh?
We don't hear Old Rugged Cross. Amazing Grace, I'm good with.
You amp it up.
Yeah, sort of, until the end when you get dirty and, you know, you're all the dirt of the dust and all that. That doesn't work for me.
You know what I like about what James does as a minister at the theater there is that you say what you say to your audience in person and those who are watching you on television is a very simple and a very clear and very sensible way of thinking mm-hmm. about everything.
Yeah.
Everything. And it is it's so appealing in that sense because you don't have to sit there and, you know, how I'm Catholic too, so I have been through a lot of different people preaching, and you think, what the heck? What are they really talking about? You
know, especially when it's in Latin. Yeah.
Well, it's remember all by the guilt. That's really what it is.
Oh, yeah, oh, totally. Yeah. Remember Latin, though? That was good because then we didn't know what we were saying. It just felt good.
I took Latin in high school, so I was one of the few people who actually got it. I was like, wait a minute, what is that actually? Domini?
Dominus vobiscum. Do you know the answer to that? Ecum spiritu tuo. I still remember. Right. I was an altar boy.
Keep in mind, this was not 20 years ago. I don't have any day to use it anymore.
Yeah, you're a lot
but
younger
that's,
than me.
Our Lord is... Our,
the I don't
Lord,
know what it means.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's the Lord.
Dominus vobiscum. Yeah. Ecum spiritu tuo.
Were you ever an altar boy?
Oh, yes.
So was I.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Until?
Until
I was slapped across the face by a priest for bringing him, not my fault, you know, the wine and, you know, the
Eucharist.
That moment. He had to wash his hands before right. he was going to, you know, deliver communion. And I was doing the 12 o'clock Mass. And whoever was doing the 11 o'clock Mass had not.
Oh, my goodness.
And he slapped you across the face?
So I had only a used, soiled towel to put on that silver plate and present it to him. And when he felt it, that it was wet and had been used, he took it and slapped me across the face.
Wow.
And my parents are sitting there in the audience. Or in the
audience.
My goodness.
In the audience.
And I was mortified.
Yeah. Is that why you didn't go into prop management? Because and now, is that also why you asked Paul to give you a good smack before each Shade of the
Earth
show?
To this day, yes.
It allows him to get the emotional journey.
That's hysterical.
What he didn't do any sword fighting films either because there was a lot.
It wasn't funny at the time, needless to say.
No, of course not. At least you were only slapped across the face.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, let's get clear.
Spotlight.
I just saw it. Oh, wasn't that brilliant?
Amazing.
Love Spotlight.
Oh, my goodness. Shall we take a moment and tell people how to see this amazing Sissy Boy show?
I bet.
Yes, please. Yes,
of course. Do you want to do it?
Do you have that there, Mike?
I do have it. Of course, it's at the NoHo Arts Center, ladies and gentlemen, and it begins its previews on February 5th. And 6th, and then has its run, officially opening February 12th and running through March 6th. And performances are Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sunday, March 6th at 3 p.m. NoHo Art Center is conveniently located at 11136 Magnolia Boulevard in North Hollywood in the beautiful NoHo Arts District there. Seats are mere $34.99. Great price for seeing something like this. It's such a wonderful theater. And for tickets and or group rates, just simply call 818-508-7101 extension 6 or visit NoHoCe. I'm going to spell this NoHoAce.com.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Will you stick around with us for a little bit, James?
I will. I can't wait to hear what this young man's going to say.
Ladies
that
and gentlemen,
won't stop.
The revered James Mellon.
nice to have a crowd follow you.
Absolutely. I think we have an arts calendar to do, right, Andrew?
Let's do that, Michael.
Okay, go
Pink
ahead.
Martini, China Forbes, and Storm Large return to the beautiful McCollum Theater in Palm Springs for five great shows beginning tomorrow, January 29th through February 2nd, drawing inspiration from music from all over the world, crossing genres of classical, jazz, and old-fashioned pop. Pink Martini's diverse repertoire is a blend influenced by Cole Porter and Duke Ellington, Tito Puente and Xavier Cugat, as well as Argentine tango, Brazilian samba, Italian folk, and Asian and romantic Hollywood musicals of the 1940s and 50s. According to band leader pianist Thomas Lauderdale, if the United Nations had a house band in 1962, Pink Martini would have been that band. The McCollum Theater for the Performing Arts is located at 73,000 Fred Waring Drive in Palm Desert, CA, just adjacent to Palm Springs. For tickets and further information, please call 866-899-2787, 866-899-2787, or visit McCollum, McCallum, theater.com.
That's right. Of course, that's the English way of spelling theater with an R-E at the end.
I have friends who will refuse to go to that website because it's not E-R.
Really?
Yeah, so absolutely. They can't stand. They say, we beat the British. Where's our spelling? Don't we get to keep anything?
Well, to go see Pink Martini, I had the pleasure of seeing them at the Hollywood Bowl and interviewing them right before that performance. And they are very cool human beings and amazing performers. Have you ever seen them?
I have, yes.
Yeah, they're exciting.
They're terrific.
Yes, they are.
And of course, Palm Desert's beautiful right now.
Yes, it is. Can't argue with that.
Weekend getaway.
Ladies and gentlemen, our next guest is back at the La Mirada Theater for the Performing Arts in La Mirada, California, where he was last seen in First Date as man number one.
Yes.
A.K.A., of course, meaning also known as the best friend from hell. And aside from that, he also appeared at that theater as the Scab in Billy Elliot, the musical. Credits include, in Los Angeles, the Glendale Center Theater's Dirty Rotten Scoundrels as Freddy, Musical Theater West's Singing in the Rain as Cosmo, 3D Theatricals 9 to 5 as Joe, the Colony Theater's Dames at Sea as Lucky, and Third Street Theater's production of The Full Monty as Ethan, which is when I met this man. Mm-hmm. And those are just a few of his credits, believe me. Other credits include national tours of A Chorus Line, a Christmas Carol, Guys and Dolls, and Cameron Mackintosh's Oliver. He recently concluded a long run as Iago in Disney's Aladdin, a musical spectacular at the famed Disneyland in California, here at the California Adventure Theme Park in Anaheim. Please welcome the one, the only, Justin Michael Wilcox.
Thank you so much.
Oh, goodness, settle
thank
your
you,
people
everybody.
Down.
Please calm down, sit down, ma'am. Thank you.
You're lucky because I also have this at my board here,
which so I'm dying to hit that button for.
Is
a
my
guest
mom
at
in
one.
The audience?
But I think the applause is much more fitting.
I like
amazing.
It.
What amazing group of credits you have.
Well, thank you.
Well,
wow.
You know, speaking of that, he says that his mother will be happy to sit down with anybody and read them his entire list of
Let's
credits.
Let's have her on
She's
the show.
It. She's done it. She had a headshot and resume on a flight from New York to L.A. and gave a casting director my headshot.
Does she see everything you do?
Almost.
Wow.
Almost. She
That's
gives
great.
Me, do I need to fly out to see that? Do I need to say that? I'm like, it's okay. I'm ensemble mom. You don't have to, you know, it's fine. She's like, you're never on long enough.
So sweet.
She's great.
Well, you are something else, really. I've seen his work, and this man just does it all, and you do it so well.
Thank you.
You are reminiscent of the kind of performers like a Donald O'Connor and those people that did these things so well, you know, back in the day of making those kinds of films and being in concert situations. I worked with that guy, Donald O'Connor. What an amazing experience that was. Mm-hmm.
An unsung hero.
Yeah. Yes, and
really?
You are too, though,
thank
young man.
You.
So I'm so happy with your success and that it's all kind of coming together for you.
Yeah, I actually met Patricia Kelly when I was doing Singing in the Rain, and she told me lots of stories about Donald O'Connor and how Gene felt about him and really wanted him on the film, Singing in the Rain.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And how he just felt that this man needs to be working more than he does. So very much, and so it's sad that the world didn't get to see everything. I think he was locked into the horse. It was kind of like Mr. Red, but with the donkey or something like that. Those TV shows and the movies that were doing so well, so he was kind of locked.
Had to stay with the franchise.
Yeah.
Well, it still made him a star.
So. I mean, he was a star, and he is and always will be Cosmo Brown.
Right.
Can you take a minute and tell me about Empire, what the story is, and obviously a little bit about your character without giving too much away?
Of course, yeah. Empire is the new show, brand new world premiere musical at La Mirada Theater, McQuay Rigby. It is about essentially about the building of the Empire State Building, the men and women, the blood, sweat, and tears that it took to get that building to the sky through the Great Depression. Excuse me. So you've got the stock market crash. We take you all the way from, you know, the high society, drinking and parties. You have prohibition happening and then the sneaking of the alcohol, stock market crash. And now it becomes very difficult to continue the race to the sky. The Empire State Building has to beat Chrysler. I mean, that's the battle, right?
Right.
When Chrysler went up, they, you know, waited to the last minute to put that spire on there just so they could be the tallest building in the world. And then comes John J. Raskob and Al Smith, who are saying, we've got investors and we've got this building going to the sky. And all of, you know, obstacles ensue. And the immigrants and the men who have come to America who have a specific trade all have to work together and put aside their differences to build this building. And that's pretty much, you know, love. Do we find it? Do they get with that girl? What happens? Loss. And elation when obviously we know the building does get built. So
yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about your character, and I will give you $500 right now to say you play King Kong.
Oddly enough, I do climb. No, I play a gentleman by the name of DiCaprio, who is an Italian. He works on the rivet gang. So when you build the buildings, the Mohawks essentially built helped build all of the buildings in New York City, and there were these gangs called the Rivet Gang. And there is they essentially will lay the beam, they lay the steel or spin the steel as they would call it, in the chains and rise it up. They bring it to the top of the building, and the Mohawks would walk the beams and lay them into place, and then they would set the steel, and then the rivet gang would come out. And there would be a furnace, a story below, and they would be heating these rivets.
Molten hot.
Yeah. And they would heat these rivets below, and they would essentially throw. There was a thrower and a catcher. I'm a catcher of the rivets. Mm-hmm. And you can actually watch this online. It's impressive. The rivet funnel that these guys caught, these like burning pieces of metal being thrown a story high with precision is incredible. I was like, oh my God, these guys are amazing. They would throw the rivets. They would catch them. Someone would take the rivet from the funnel, place it into place, and then it would be riveted in place, and it would all melt and fuse the steel together. So you actually get to see all of that happen on stage, which is really, really cool.
I read something interesting when I was researching, and these hot rivets being thrown from one, you don't see that anywhere in the world anymore. But I mean, to think about that during this time, the danger, but also just, I mean, you get one chance at this.
Yeah.
You don't mess this up again. If you fall or if you drop it, you know, somebody can die. They said they actually used to recruit former baseball players to come be rivet catchers and throwers because it was such a precision exercise.
Yeah.
And the muscle memory was the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was, hey, make the throw, you know,
make the catch.
Safe. Isn't that amazing?
Hand-eye coordination. And to touch on the safety of that, of that time, the standard in terms of insurance and in terms of acceptable losses was about a death per floor.
Much like theater today.
Exactly. Walking a death per board. And the gentleman who was the architect on the building, played by the wonderful Kevin Early, set up these safety nets and rigs and wires and catch, you know, falls, and they have to clip in. And so by the end of the Empire State Building, you know, its completion, they'd only lost, I believe, 6 people.
Wow.
For 102 floors. And I believe 4 of them actually worked on the building. One of them was happened some other way. And one of them was sad, something fell off the building and hit something, and it wound up, I'm punching people in the studio. You didn't see that. Hit somebody and across the leg, I guess, and she got infected and died.
Oh my God!
So that doesn't necessarily. I mean, it's a part of the building because something fell, but really, you know, 5 people.
And if you tumbled off from an upper story and landed on that net, you were part of the Halfway to Hell Club, mm-hmm. is what they called it, which means, you know, a few years earlier before these nets, everybody was dead if you fell off. And these nets and the innovations of keeping people up there, they said that these people fell off and they were so used to that idea of that being their last moment, they just completely relaxed. And then they hit the net. So they called called him the Halfway to Hell Club. Halfway to Hell Club. Yeah.
Wow.
It's great.
Dangerous job. Wow. Dangerous time.
Things really that we don't even think about, you know, yeah. when a building is being constructed like that.
And when we look at that time of building, I mean, the architecture and the amazing feats were all done at a cost of human life.
So, yeah. And not that, but the hardest part about building those buildings was you're in this epicenter. There's nowhere for storage. There's no storage. Mm-hmm. So you have to order the steel prefab. You've got to get the marble. You've got to get the limestone. You've got to get everything that they have. And it has to be delivered specifically on that day, on that time. And it's got to be used, you know, immediately. Right. And it's got to be sent up because there's nowhere to put it. So that was
scary
and was kind of amazing, the ingenuity of these people and the smarts to know. You know, it's why I do theater and I don't build buildings. but here we are.
How much of that is depicted in the musical itself?
There, you get a lot of this information is depicted in the musical itself.
I mean, from a visual standpoint.
From a visual standpoint, the show is stunning. It is spectacular. I think it's the creative team has done such a beautiful job where we'll actually, you know, build the building in front of you, and I don't want to give too much away because it's such a great surprise to the audience when they see these things happening.
The building does get built. Oh, thank goodness.
Titanic does sink. Don't sit too close; you might get wet. The set, we have a name for her called Helga, and our brilliant director, Marcia Milgram Dodge, named her right away. This is Helga, introduced us to Helga. We had a walkthrough with the Fab Studio in New York building the entire set. It's one of the biggest sets I've ever been in my life.
Is this by David Gallo?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. And I mean, just beautiful. And projections, you've got the names over there. I'm not going to mess up everybody's names.
David, he's credited as both for scenic and production.
Scenic and projection. Yeah. Just beautiful. And not just that, so there's this, it's a hard, you know, it's a huge steel Helga is what we call her. We could sometimes sneak Marcia hugging her and just being like, please be nice to me. Please work.
And Marcia is?
Marcia's our director.
Okay.
And it's such a...
Does Marcia have a last name?
Marcia Milgram Dodge.
There you go.
MMD.
You gotta credit the director whenever on radio. I think that's
she's amazing. Oh, I said her before. And she's amazing. And Sari Getz, our musical director and conductor, is brilliant. She's so good. The creative team, Carol Sherman, Bob Hall, the writers of this master piece. I have to credit them in huge because I did a reading of the show like 11 years ago, and to see the amount that it's changed.
Wow.
And even throughout the creative process of putting this new show up, there was every day new pages coming in and out.
Were you 10 years old then?
I was 10 years old. No. But I was young enough to play a character that I'm no longer young enough to play. Let's put it that way. A week before we opened, a new song came in from our soft opening to our full opening. We had changed things. So it's constantly morphing. And that's a big ode to the writers, because I've been a part of new pieces where everything is so precious to them and they can't let anything go for the sake of the piece. And in this, they really have come together to put their best foot forward. They're fantastic.
It sounds very exciting.
La Mirada, of course, is an amazing space to see a show. Very fun to sit in the audience and see what they can do. That must have been strange, though, to see so many different incarnations of the script over, you said, 10 years from reading to production.
I did a reading like in New York. I'd say like 11 years ago or something like that. I came in and so it was very quick. Like somebody had pulled out of it and was like, hey, and a friend of mine who had been directing said, hey, I need somebody, would you come in and do this? And so it was like a matter of a couple of days. So I kind of was like, you know, we all know those moments.
I'm sorry,
like,
what were you like again?
And you do the reading and then it's gone, you know, nothing happens, you don't hear anything, and then, you know, years later here we are. So very funny. Such a serendipitous thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Have you ever counted how many words you speak in a minute?
I don't know if you know this, but I used to be the voice for Micro Machines.
No,
I'm just kidding.
I would love that. With the mustache, though, you could pull that off right now, man.
I feel like Luigi. It's so funny. You can't see this, but I don't normally have a mustache, and this is nothing against mustaches. I feel like my father.
Good, because we have a huge mustache contingent out there.
Mustache.
Hundreds of mustaches listen to the show.
Yeah. Just the mustache, though. Nothing attached to it. Just the mustache. It's very exciting.
Do you like it?
I like having a beard. The mustache is a little weird. I've never actually had just a mustache
before. Does it itch?
It does.
It does, yeah.
It does. It's starting to, like, come down and touch, you know, to curl and to touch the lip. It's a touch of my lip, you know? So, yeah.
So you had to keep that trim.
Yes. Yeah. No. They want it to grow.
Oh.
They want it to grow for the show. Yeah. They just wanted to,
holy
you know,
cow. Why didn't they just put one on you then?
That's
like that.
Good question. Because it's for, I have it for the whole show. I have it for the whole show. And like those are, you know, nobody wants that glue. It's so annoying.
Yeah, the Italian man.
They're constantly falling off. Right. And then it does. And then you smile because it's falling off. And then it falls off more. So then you do this like, this no lip move smile. Right. It's just.
I have both my actors for Poe, for Dark Heart of Poe, growing mustaches right now. And it's interesting to watch the pride when they come in with a little more full mustache. Look what I'm doing. I am a man.
I did this.
I grow mustaches. That's what if I ever hit puberty, I'm definitely going to grow one.
Yeah, I was thinking you'd probably look good with one. It's tough.
It's so funny. A good mustache is a rare thing. And you look at some of these great actors who have made their careers, you know, Clark Gable, or, of course, all these people who made their careers off of mustaches. That's their most identifiable trait, which I think is great.
We're going to tell people how to see Empire in just a minute. But I want to ask Justin a question. What's up next for you? Because you're always working at lightning speed.
Oddly enough.
Are you working for Super Mario Brothers anywhere?
I hope. I do. I'm going to win. Actually, for the first time, in about a year and a half, nothing. I'm very excited. I'm gonna go to help a friend drive across the country, and then I am gonna sail. Some friends sailing on the Disney Fantasy, so I'm gonna sail in the Fantasy, and obviously some auditions coming up and some projects on hold. But they're all NDA'd, so I can't talk about them. Hopefully, a lot of things are moving into the voiceover world and cartoons and things like that. So,
cool.
Writing a cartoon. With a friend, and we're really excited to see where that goes and get some meetings and pitch it.
Sounds great.
That's lovely. The Disney people are going to be with us, actually, this Sunday.
Oh, great. Do you know
who? I'm sorry. Yes, this Sunday, and the finale for LA's Next Race.
Oh, great, great, great. Yes. Casting.
Yes.
Disney casting for
Robbie
Parks.
Armitage.
Robbie, yes, for the Parks, yes. Yeah. Yes, he's great. He's lovely. He's just took over that position, so
yeah,
it's a very lovely.
Yes, he is a lovely man. So that's awesome. But I thought you mentioned some in conversation. Dreamgirls.
Oh, I have been just helping La Mirada. Their next production is Dreamgirls.
Oh,
so I've
that's
just
right.
been
and
helping.
That will also be seen
here
at the Valley Performing Arts.
Correct. And then they also go to Tokyo. They're taking it to Tokyo. So the Tokyo producers are in town, and I've just been helping Julia Flores cast all the wonderful talent here in Los Angeles. It's such a joy to be on the other side of the table and see people come in and sing. You know. I can't imagine. Fiddler's not my favorite show. I'm maybe losing. It's great, but I can't imagine having to cast and listen to the music over and over and over and over and over. Whereas like this is like Dreamgirls, and people are coming in and just wailing, and they're just it's like yes all day. And
cool.
Reading with them has been such a joy because. We have to do the scene into the song, and I have to fight the urge to like let my big black woman come out and sing with them. You know, like what about what I need? You know, just like Justin, this isn't about you.
You have to shave the mustache.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
From here on out.
Exactly.
Well, not necessarily.
That's funny.
Depends.
Yeah, not really.
Yeah.
So it's been a joy.
Will
so,
you
Dreamers.
Give Julia a big hug?
I will.
Me.
I absolutely
I
will.
Love her.
She's a doll.
Yes, she is. And she's always very loyal to LA's Next Greatest A-Star and hires a lot of our kids. So.
And you guys run through Valentine's Day, February 14th
yes,
at the La Mirada Theater.
And to get tickets for that performance, ladies and gentlemen, you can do that easily by calling 562-944-9801 or 714-994-6310. Or you can buy them online, of course, at La Mirada Theater. Again, the spelling with the R-E at the end of that word, theater.com. And student, senior, children, and group discounts are available. So go see theater. Put
Absolutely.
Down the remote and go see these wonderful things.
Visit
right?
one of these great theaters around
You know,
around
a funny
Southern
thing
California.
Happened on the way. The Forum is opening this weekend out at Cabrillo Music Theater.
Nick Santa Maria.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
yeah,
Nick
Larry
and Larry Raven.
Raven.
We had them on last
great,
week.
Funny,
nice.
Funny man.
Boy, oh boy. We had a, it was like, hold on to your pearls, girls, yeah. because it was a ride from hell.
I actually went out and got a burger halfway through the interview.
Yeah, you guys didn't need it, I'm sure. They didn't need you at all. None whatsoever.
Worst part, they didn't know we were gone.
I have never laughed that hard.
Good show though. That was a really good show.
Yes,
those guys were great, as are both of you. But yes. It was funny to sit here and feel like I owed them $20 at the end of the interview. Thank you for the performance. They were great today.
Actually, you made me laugh when you said that you were going to sue me for the title Sissy Boy because apparently you were called a sissy boy growing up. That's funny.
You know, I think everybody who I went from football into theater, and I think everybody who did theater in high school dealt with some of that. And it's funny how people take it and use it to make themselves stronger. And I think that's a great thing. So much industry, so much industry. disastrous behavior came from people who dealt with difficult things in high school and stepped outside the norm a little bit. And I was telling the story about a fight choreographer I know who was a great football player, played in college, ended up breaking his leg and having a terrible injury, and went into fight choreography. And you could tell that none of his buddies understood what he did, but he took it and he made it an art form and brought new people into the theater and reached out. I thought it was a really cool thing. So, yeah, I like people who have done that, who struggled in high school and families they didn't fit into and go out and do great things.
It's funny. I get lots of messages on Facebook from, you know, like all the jocks, and I played all the sports and I, you know, as much as I could, you know, theater that didn't interfere with, you know, and you still see all the people who are still reaching and doing the arts and reaching for their dreams and doing things, and the people who were the sports people who now have like different lives, who are working in offices or working, you know, have their own businesses or whatever it is, and they're like, you're still doing that. That's amazing. Like, that's so cool, you know. So it moves into this place of, I think people are in awe of it because, you know, some people recognize how hard the job is, and others are just like, hey, I saw you on TV. You're a big star now. And you're like, no, that was the one day I did three lines, but thank you so much. I'll take it. Thank you. You know,
I was actually asked to come back and be the valedictorian speaker at my high school. Now, when I graduated from my high school, they barely noticed that I left. And when they asked me to come back, I was like, oh, this is going to be kind of weird. And I had just starred in 42nd Street in Philadelphia. It was at the Forest Theater. So I went back and stood on the stage where I'd done all those horrible, you know, It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman, West Side Story, where I played Baby John. And I'm standing up there, I'm giving this long talk about that you can make it no matter where you are. And they said, could you really point out the fact that you really didn't do much in high school? but that when you got out of high school, everything flourished? And I was like, No, I'm not going to point that out, but thank you for bringing it up.
I don't know that that makes them sound too good either. We didn't recognize he was good at the time.
Yeah, but, could you imagine? I'd be up there. All you losers out there, you can make a difference. Really? Hello?
It's possible.
I know, right?
That's so you did It's a Plane, It's a Bird, It's...
I did It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman.
I loved Anita Gillette.
Wasn't she the one that sang Lois Lane?
Yeah.
Gillette.
It was a very interesting show.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That's what I say in the morning just before I shave.
Anita Gillette. I need a Gillette.
You're trying to get voiceover work for Gillette now. I'm with you.
There it is. Hello. Product placement.
Shall we embarrass these gentlemen?
I think so.
Let's do it.
Don't you think? It's kind of a baptism, guys, that we do with all of our guests. And we ask you to recall.
What do you have? I'm like,
recall an awkward.
We both crossed our arms like
awkward, embarrassing
defensive posture. Defensive posture.
There is so many. We can't tell half of them on the radio, but please,
extra points. Melon, you are first.
Oh, I'm first? Oh, sure. Age before beauty?
Okay. Beauty was a horse in black.
Well, let's see. Okay, so the one that comes to mind to me is at the Goodspeed Opera House when I was doing Funny Face. And it was this huge Broadway revival. They were expecting to bring it into New York and really cover the New York Times. And so every important person was there at some point. And there was this one Saturday night, and I came out. It was right before the Funny Face theme song. And I'm sitting on the settee, and it's a 1927 musical. So I'm in all these big clothes, gorgeous clothes. I'm sitting next to the girl who plays my sister, Adele Astaire. And I'm starting to talk, and the music's coming in to start the song. And the audience is laughing. And I'm thinking, geez, these drunken people on a Saturday night. And they're just laughing and laughing, and I can't figure it out. And so I start singing, you know, Frankie, dear, your birthday gift reveals to me that at heart. And I happen to look down, and I'm wearing these big baggy pants that are like 1920s pants, and I have forgotten to zip it up. And it is, but it's not just the zipper that's open, the pants are wide open, and all you see is my dance belt with like pubic hair,
of course.
And that's what I see. And I look down, and as soon as the audience sees me looking down, it's bursting with laughter. The orchestra stops because they're like, we're not going on with this song. And I was like, I was so embarrassed, and I stood up, turned around, gave them my ass, and like made this big move to zip it up. Big applause, and we sat down. And I just went, maestro, and we began it again. So then, after that, every time I came onto the stage, Michael Price said to my dresser, John, I can't remember his name now, John Mercucci, he said, John, you are to be on stage in the wings, never let him walk on stage without checking his zipper. And that's what he did for the rest of the run.
It's funny.
It's amazing.
It's kind of similar to my
the dance belt. Anytime your dance belt is the key to the story, you know it's going to be a good story. So.
Yeah. Justin,
dance belts are rude. It has to be something that happened to you, yeah?
You can totally lie. Nobody's going to fact check on the show.
I know, it's true. I don't, the most most, I think the most recent, thing that was like rude and funny, I was doing, just like up in Granada, we were doing My Fair Lady, the reading that came from Kennedy Center. So it was like Jonathan Pryce and Cloris Leachman. And the two of them are hilarious and amazing. And I was, because it was a staged reading and a lot of the characters actually were off book, the director had me, Marsha Milgram Dodge, had me kind of know all of the characters' lines in a scene for Cloris Leachman.
Wow.
Because she didn't have her book with her. So I'm behind her, and she's one of the funniest people ever. And it is always the Cloris show. So if she were to go up on her lines, I would be behind her being like, you know, you bring her on the car. You know, whatever, leading in. And she always took this one beat. She had these little meringue cookies. And it was her and Michael York. And I'm standing behind them. And I'm like, what the hell am I doing here? And she would be like, you mean to say that my son is bringing a girl? And then she would take this beat that's like a drive a truck through. And she would put the meringue to her lips. And she would take it away and go, to Ascot. And the director was enough. She was like, feed her line! Just feed her line! And when she said that, Cloris turned to me and looked up, and she's like, don't you ever feed me my line. And so now I'm like trapped in this, what do I do? What do I do? It's like double dutch. Like, when do I get in? Like, what do I do? And so the day of the show, y'all, comes, and there's Cloris, and we have two shows. The day of the show, there's Cloris, and so you mean to say that my son is ringing? And I'm like, Ascot. And she's like, to Ascot. And she looks up at me and, you know, she eats the cookie and I have to walk her off stage. So she takes my arm because she's got to go from all the light, and I meet her stage left and bring her to the person, and we move on from that scene to the Ascot Gavotte, and I have to grab my this like big long piece of paper thing and this huge top hat so I can come back in and meet the ensemble to do this like horse step downstage, and it's the only thing happening on stage. It's the only thing happening. And Cloris, in retribution for feeding her line, latched onto my arm and would not let me go. So I had to pry her fingers from my arm. And the entire time she's giving me full weight and laughing the entire time. She knew exactly what was happening. So I had to like throw her off, like literally threw this old woman, like 80 years old, off of me. And I had to grab, and there was no hiding it. I was done. I was not in the dance moves. I was not in anything. And Marsha was like, what happened? What did you do? What's wrong with you? And I was like, she got me back.
Blame Cloris.
Cloris Leachman is what's wrong
hysterical. With
her. She is so a funny lady. I was interviewing, I know we have, our time is up, but I was interviewing her on the red carpet at the Pantages Theater. For an opening, and Martin, I had just interviewed Martin Short, and so he was at the next stop next to me, and I was talking with her, and she saw him out of her peripheral vision, and went over, left me, and went over and just planted her tongue in his mouth.
That's it.
And yeah,
that'll do.
And then walked back to me.
She's amazing. She's amazing. Yeah. She
is.
And if we ever have Martin Short on the show.
I have so many stories.
Well, this has been another fantastic edition of State of the Arts. I hope you agree, ladies and gentlemen, as you're listening to this program. And we thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Justin, James, thank
joy.
You.
Thank you, guys. And
a dream.
Thank you, Andrew, as always.
Thank you, sir.
This is our last show together, as far as we know.
That's right.
At least for the moment. So
I want to thank you
for,
Michael, for the hospitality. You've been very kind to me, and I can't wait to hear Paul back. It's going to be great.
Well, that'll be a joy. But in the meantime, you're welcome back anytime.
I appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to State of the Arts. Yes. I'm Andrew James.
I'm Michael Sterling. See you on the radio.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohlev, right here on LA Talk Radio.